Once upon a time, in ancient days, before the internet, before you could Google any image of anybody or anything, we listened to music on cassette tapes. And I went to see a singer whose music I had just discovered and loved. He was playing at the Bottom Line in New York City. It was this really great music venue, kind of a medium-sized place, all dark and black inside, and the space was wider than it was deep from the stage. And there were chairs and little tables on a raked floor. And if you chose the wrong seat, you might have a pillar in your way. We ordered a beer and some greasy snacks, and I was so excited. When David Wilcox sauntered out onto the thrust stage in his jeans and old t-shirt and sat down on a beat-up stool with his guitar, I was underwhelmed. He was a pretty nondescript guy. But with every song he played, he got more and more descript. By the time we were on our feet at the end of the concert, he looked like Captain America to me. I've gone to see him play probably a dozen times in the decades since. And even aging, he still has it, because I know who's in there, and he shines. When we act on our truest selves, it lights us up, right? And things change. And we see the shine in people when they are doing the things that they love, because you just can't miss it. There's no missing the authenticity and the joy when a David Wilcox tells stories and sings his songs. When somebody shines, it's so bright. Once you see it, they never look the same again. You know their true light. I know you've experienced that. Sometimes, even with somebody that you think you know pretty well, and then they surprise you and suddenly you see their true light. There's something new and brighter. It changes things and you can't help but respond to it, right? The light in me recognizes the light in you. It's a special kind of joy. But life isn't one shining moment after another. Great hardship, great suffering is part of life. We carry so many things, some that everyone can see, some that are our private burden. Where's the dazzle then? I think it's pointed to in today's Gospel of the Transfiguration. Jesus takes three of his closest disciples up on the mountain and they see him shine, resplendent in his true glory. He is a light beside two towering figures of the Jewish people, Elijah, the greatest of the prophets, and Moses, the giver of the law. And then Elijah and Moses recede, but Jesus remains because he is the fulfillment of the prophecies of old, and he is the culmination of the law. The Gospel of John says, "For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." The transfiguration is glorious, and Peter and James and John witness it. But I point something out here. These disciples had already seen Jesus shine. Up to this point in the Gospel of Luke, they have heard him teaching. They have seen him heal lepers and a paralytic and a withered hand and a hemorrhaging woman and cast out legion demons and feed 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. They've seen him calm the Sea of Galilee. And if that isn't bright enough, they saw him raise the widow's son from the dead. Truly, the disciples have already seen Jesus shining. That's why they're following him. But now, he takes them up the mountain, and the vision is glorious. It's so glorious that we tend to skip over a critical passage in Luke, verse 31. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all tell the story of the Transfiguration. But Luke is the only one who tells us what Jesus and Moses and Elijah were talking about on the mountaintop. The King James translation says, "They spake of his decease, which he should accomplish at Jerusalem." A little more graphic. Moses and Elijah and Jesus were talking about his exodus in the Greek, his going out, his death. They were talking about Jesus being on his way to his crucifixion on this earthly path toward Jerusalem. Not so very glorious. Now stop for a minute. Imagine what the conversation about Jesus' departure was between these three luminous figures. How could it have felt to Jesus in these days of journey toward Jerusalem, knowing he was going to be deserted and degraded and tortured? What did he need from that conversation? Were Moses and Elijah offering him encouragement and strength for this hardest part of the journey? And did being there give encouragement to the disciples too, who some 8 days before had heard this Jesus, whose shine they've been following, tell them he was going to have to suffer and be killed? And then, even greater than Moses and Elijah, the voice from heaven, rounding back and recalling Jesus' own baptism, "This is my son," with the emphasis, "Listen to him." Encouragement upon encouragement. Why? Because things were about to get awful. I think about that. Even at this moment of his great glory shining at this transfiguration on the mountaintop, Jesus was carrying a frightening knowledge, a terrible suffering. But the great figures of Jesus' Jewish faith and God himself were there reminding him and reminding the disciples too that God was with him and he was beloved. That's powerfully significant, that the glory and the suffering are both on the mountaintop, that when Jesus' divine nature was dazzlingly visible to his disciples, his human suffering was the topic of the conversation. It's a poignant affirmation about life, and it's something absolutely essential to living with sorrow, that joy and hardship walk side by side, glory and suffering. And we need to know that in the midst of darkness, so we don't forget the hope and the promise of being followers of Jesus Christ. In the midst of what might feel like an ever-worsening and divisive time in our nation, we need to remember that all people are beloved of God, even people we disagree with. In the midst of our confusion about policy, we need to remember that our clear call as Christians is to lift up the oppressed, especially in the face of setbacks and exclusion. And in the midst of feeling overwhelmed by all of that, overwhelmed by that call, we need to remember that nothing can separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ. We put our faith there, and we can still see the dazzling light shine and follow it, even in the darkest times. The whole of creation is gathered up and transfigured in Jesus Christ. It looked like heaven, but they were talking about real suffering. I know I hold on to that in my life. We each carry with us heavy griefs, sorrows, and sufferings that can make our world feel very dark. It's part of the human journey. But that's precisely where the Transfiguration gives me hope. And I hope that it gives you hope too. That in the midst of the reality of great suffering, there was the dazzling light of the divine. Joy walks beside grief. I hear in my head John 1:5, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." We can find this in our own lives, that even in the midst of sorrows that we carry, if we pry our hearts open to joy, joy will creep in. It is our heritage and our gift as Christians. Sometimes we can be afraid of letting that joy in, afraid that letting joy in somehow means we're forgetting. But when it's about love, we never forget. Joy doesn't send our grief away, but it longs to be its bright companion. The poet Malcolm Guite wrote about the Transfiguration. The love that dances at the heart of things, shone out upon us from a human face. And to that light, the light in us leaped up. We felt it quicken somewhere deep within. A sudden blaze of long extinguished hope trembled and tingled through the tender skin. Nor can this blackened sky, this darkened scar, eclipse that glimpse of how things really are. How things really are. That's what the Transfiguration shows us in Jesus. The love of God is dazzling, and that love, that light of Christ in the face of everything, is inextinguishable. We are a resurrection people. You have seen it in yourself, and you have seen it in others too. Once we get that glimpse of how things really are, we too are transfigured.